Blog Talk Radio.
August 12, 2010. I'm your host, Doug Kelly, here with Grant Rubin. Don't stay, Grant.
Hey, Doug, how's it going? Welcome, everybody.
It's been a hot day today.
Oh, amen to that.
I think the heat index was really high down here in Florida today because it was just unbelievably hot, hotter than I've seen it all year so far.
Yeah, when the humidity's like 100% at like 10:30 in the morning, you know it's a warm one. Only mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. That's true down here.
And Floridians. All right, so tonight we've got Bill Sweet with us from Spindrift Research. We're going to be talking about science, consciousness, and the trickster. And it should be an interesting show tonight if you'd like to get in on it. If you have a question, you can, of course, ask it in the chat room, or you can give us a call. The numbers are on your screen, 347-945-7799. We'd love to hear from you. John Rossi is with us tonight screening our calls. And I'm trying to stay out of trouble, I'm sure. So, without any further ado, let's introduce our guest tonight, Bill Sweet, with Spindrift Research. Bill, welcome to Paranexus Universe.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I've been interested in the connection between psychic research and spiritual research. This kind of comes from childhood. I was brought up in a neighborhood which was an academic neighborhood, and everybody debated everything. It wasn't that they were debunkers so much, but I had a lot of, every time I'd have a psychic experience or spiritual experience, somebody would challenge you when I'd debate about it. So I said, well, gee, if I'm ever going to have any credibility, I'm going to have to get into researching these things and finding out if there's any scientific basis to it. Because if you have an individual experience, it seems like you can get shot down. But if you can show there's a scientific basis to it, then you're in a better position. It seems like there's a lot of interest in this today to find out about these things.
Well, let's talk
about
go ahead.
So what I did was is that I, fortunately, I got in contact with, through a date. I had a date with this guy. She said, you have to meet my father and my brother. And they were Bruce and John Klingbeil, and they lived three towns over from mine. And they were professional Christian Science practitioners. I don't know if you know what Christian Science practitioners are, but they're healers in the church.
Right.
And they also had amateur science backgrounds, did a lot of things in science. And they were trying to show that there's these things that do happen when prayer happens, because they were finding when people had, when there's a failure of prayer, it's pretty obvious, but when somebody had a success from prayer, it was hard to show how it actually happened. People say, what? I don't believe that happened, or it was coincidence, or the placebo effect, or exaggeration, or whatever. And so they said, well, it's time to look into the scientific basis of these things, because society is becoming more scientific. So they had to do a lot of research into parapsychology to do this, because it was only in the parapsychology areas that research was going on in consciousness. And so the Klingbeils combined parapsychology with what they call prayer psychology, and they started studying it. And they started experimenting and bringing people in from many different religious backgrounds, and even a couple atheists, to see what they could do with their thoughts on organisms. We had plant organisms that would have something wrong with them, and we would have people pray for the organisms, and then the organisms would be monitored by computer and measuring equipment to see what would happen when thought and prayer was applied to the organisms. And we found a lot of effects happened, healing effects. Sometimes people actually just manipulated the the darn organisms with their thought. Some people even damage the
plant. Yeah, I remember back in the 70s when they did the plant experiments where people would concentrate and send good vibes to the plant, and they had a control and your classic experiment, and it was they had some interesting results.
Yeah, some of that was from our group because Spindrift, the group I'm with, started in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And what we were trying to show was that thought prayer does do distinctive things. And probably the three most important things that have come out of Spindrift are, one, we found that there's directed thought and prayer that has been designated by Spindrift, goal-directed prayer. And this is when you specifically want a certain thing to happen. And this is the majority of the way people pray and think.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in our culture, they have a goal in mind.
Well, they certainly do it in Eastern culture, too, because it's just called meditation there.
Uh-huh. And what happens with goal-directed prayer, which is sometimes called petitionary prayer, you're asking for a specific thing to happen. Now, that it can be good and that can be bad because you even ask for the wrong thing. Then the other type of prayer that Spindrift tested is called non-goal-directed prayer, and where you are leaving it open to the best result that can happen. The Bible refers to this as thy will be done prayers, when you're getting your ego and your own plans out of the way. And because of these two styles of prayer that were isolated in the laboratory, the Spindrift laboratory, we were able to really come up with two different discernible patterns of prayer. Goal-directed prayer had one pattern, and non-goal-directed prayer had another pattern. And this is probably a most well-known contribution to science because a lot of people have picked up on this. And then some people prayed and didn't get results. There's always that, too.
So what you're really studying is the PK element of prayer.
I suppose. I never thought of it that way. Could you tell me what you mean by that? You're giving me a new idea there. I like the sound of it. What do you mean?
Well, it sounds good, but I don't know what the hell I meant.
Oh, okay. Well, I like
no,
it, too.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I'll explain.
Okay.
Well, there's obviously you're the experiments were with prayer directed and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, isn't that the same thing as directing energy to something?
Well, as far as the directed prayer, it usually is, yes.
So if we're talking energy, I was just substituting the PK or psychokinesis for that. So if we, through our mind, have some effect on something somewhere, isn't that PK?
Mm-hmm. I suppose so, but I'm a little unfamiliar with that. When I think of PK, I'm thinking of radiation.
Well, psychokinesis, right?
Yes. All prayer is psychokinesis. You're correct. Is there a connection? Does psychokinesis also include PK? Because I wasn't aware of that. I'll have to study that. You gave me a new little area here to look into.
Hey, no problem.
But I would like to tell you this, though. As far as the non-goal-directed prayer goes, which is the more spiritual prayer, this is what is fascinating. It suggests a higher intelligence outside of the mind, outside of man, because the person praying has no idea what the result will be, but there is a result. In other words, you are putting your own agenda and your own mind aside for thy will be done, no goals in mind. And we find this is the most spiritual type of prayer. And here's how it worked in our experiments. When people prayed for a plant or from our yeast cells or soybean plants or whatever it is, or some kind of stress, they usually didn't know actually what the specific problem was, but they had an idea in their mind that they did. So they would pray for what they thought presented health to the organism. And a lot of times when they had their own agenda, good-natured and sincerely planned, they would actually manipulate the plant in a direction that was not in the best interest of the plant because they thought they knew what was good for it. Now, the person praying a non-goal-directed prayer, which is just surrounding the plant with love and what is best for the plant, let it be affirmed and let it be produced. Then the plant came around to its norms and what was normal for it. But the person praying, interestingly enough, had no idea what that was. So this suggests that when we open up our thought, we can bring in an energy outside of ourselves that knows and that is intelligent to know what is needed in the situation where we actually don't know what the needs are. So this is a very interesting distinction.
Hmm. Well, I know that they've had success in, I haven't researched it very thoroughly yet, but I know they've had a success in affecting water molecules and so forth.
Yeah, isn't that exciting?
Mm-hmm. So
there's a lot of things coming up. I think that I've also done some experiments with myself, separate from Spindrift, on the effect of my thought on my stereo equipment. You can affect machinery, too.
Have you actually done that?
I've actually done that, yeah.
Can you talk about that?
I haven't found a way to measure it, but I do know that the result is that my system sounds more like musical instruments than other systems because it sounds more like it's producing a little higher level of harmony. I would say I'm having about a 5% effect on it. I'd say it's somewhere in the 5% area if I had to make an analogy. In other words, everything is alive. Everything has consciousness, even though it may be in the form of unconsciousness. And we affect everything around us. So there's an interaction between man and machine. And it's called psychotronics is the term.
Everything. Absolutely. You know, and I think that you're certainly onto something there, Bill, because, you know, just because we can't communicate through verbally or non-verbally with whatever we interact with doesn't mean that they don't have a consciousness either. So, you know, I think, you know, for me, why I find that so plausible or so, you know, fascinating is the fact of the interconnectedness at a quantum level with all of us. So it's just fascinating stuff.
It's fascinating. And talking about the quantum level, one of the terms at Spindrift, by the way, our website for Spindrift is spindriftresearch.org or spindriftresearch.com. Either one will take you there. spindriftresearch.org or .com. And by the way, I've written a story of the history of Spindrift. You can read about that too. You can just hit Book News. My book is called A Journey into Prayer. It's one of the most successful things I've ever done. I have a list of failures too, but this is one of the most successful things I've done. And I tell you what, my beginner's luck on
that.
You're on that list.
Yes, sir. I can guarantee I was.
Okay, that's wonderful. Well, I had beginner's luck. I got on Art Bell. Boy, you can imagine what that did.
Oh mm-hmm. Yeah, good for you.
Oh man, yeah, that's great. So the thing is that what we're trying to do. I think you probably a lot of people in your audience are already, but you call believers and they accept all this stuff. But,
well, we're looking actually. The show is aimed at paranormal researchers, and so we're all looking for answers. You know, some people have psychic abilities, so they're a little more convinced. Others are still looking for some objective evidence.
Well, great. They certainly will enjoy the experiments page and theory page on the Spindrift website. Question arises, what's happening in society? And I cannot figure out if we're going more into an area of interest now in these subjects or away from it. Do you have a feeling for that?
Well, I think, like everything, it comes and goes. I mean, anomalous research, paranormal research has been a big thing for decades. It's come into more public awareness with some of the TV programs that have been out.
Uh-huh.
And so you have a lot of different people who are playing around with it or dabbling in it, so to speak, or are forming amateur groups and things like that. But there's always been a core element of serious researchers that's always been around. And so, I think it comes and goes. I think we're probably seeing a little bit of a fade on the
number of groups,
number of groups. Grant's and I have talked about that before.
Yes, I was wondering what you thought was the reason for that.
It's not as sensational as it's on TV. You know, it's one of those
things that's
where,
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
and
the paranormal does just pop up. You know, demons aren't in every house, you know. And it's we found a lot of, the old expression, you know, there's a lot of there's no such thing as a haunted house, but there's haunted people sometimes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So a lot of times there was a psychological component in a lot of the hauntings that we've been to.
Yeah. Well, it's a problem because a lot of the TV shows, in order to get the show to work, they got to fake a lot of this stuff, and it's a problem.
Yeah, and it's not glamorous going home at 2:00 in the morning if you live, you know, if we're in Miami and we live by Tampa.
It's funny. I get this kind of argument all the time. I had an atheist. Actually, I had two atheists. They knew each other. They both gave me the same argument. Well, if prayer works, I would only believe prayer works if it would heal amputees. And I said, well, that's a pretty big claim there. Well, we're just trying to show that it works, that there is something to it. Now, you're making this an impossible thing. You know, they want something outrageous at this, for this time. I said, why don't we just show there's a phenomenon, you know? You start small and work up. And a lot of people, that isn't good, cool enough for them. You're right, sensational. They want something really sensational. And, in fact, I even read about it in the book. I had this one woman come to Spindler. She was really excited about what we did, you know, and she got so excited until she came to our laboratory and saw these people praying for plants and all this, and some of these little small demonstrations of the power of thought and prayer. And she just, I don't know, she just ran out of there as fast as she could. It wasn't sensational enough with her. So, so she would then say, I know she was in India studying with some guru. I mean, she won. I mean, we take small steps in science. We don't have these big claims, and a lot of people want these big claims, and you're right, I've heard a lot about that. And this might even, interestingly enough, might lead into the third thing that Spindrift has contributed to the science about the trickster. The what we found is that why is it that you can talk about paranormal things, you can have these TV shows that everyone's fascinated about. I have a friend who's real interested in stuff, but he doesn't want to know if it's real or not, but he's interested in this. It's kind of a contradiction, you know?
Yeah.
We also, interestingly enough, had a Christian minister said, gee, you can't investigate prayer. What if you find out it doesn't work? strange things like that. So people have a kind of a, they don't want to know. They want to keep it in the mysterious area, you know?
Well, I think it's important to point out here that, you know, the way I look at it, and I don't know, you can comment on this, but the way I look at it, if you're praying to a deity, good luck. You know, the silence is going to be deafening. But if you're using prayer in an effort to direct energy at something, or you're using prayer to meditate, you know, now you're going to see some results. That's my take on it. How does that fit in with your research?
Well, everyone has different experiences because we tested people from all different backgrounds, and they all
different belief systems.
Different belief systems. Now, I don't think I'm a believer in God myself, but I don't think there's a way to yet scientifically prove that. It's kind of like God keeps himself hidden. But it's
he likes to be arcane. How do we know that God isn't a trickster?
Yeah.
You know, how do we know that? I mean, I don't think God has any evil intent. He's got a big universe to run. But two universes to bend together in a little trick for a fraction of a second,
it may be that from our point of view, it may be that God is a bit of a trickster, because my own personal belief, I happen to be a Christian scientist, but my own personal belief is that he kind of is a warrior. He likes to set things in motion and see where things go and just watch to see what we do, you know.
Uh-huh.
It is sort of amazing, if you really think about it, how man has evolved from the cave to where he is now. This is something that man did, and I think God likes to watch that and see what we're going to do. Now, we could also blow ourselves up. I don't know what he thinks about terrorism, but he must be fascinated with the wild way people
are
destroying
this. You know, I don't know. Where we'd kind of hit a dividing road is like, the way I look at it is, it's just like he's got a big, big universe to run, and you know, he kind of lets people do what they're going to do. If they can't manage themselves, I'm sure he feels sorry for them. But you know, hey, he's too busy to be worrying about terrorists or you know who's winning the race at Hialeah or anything. You know, at least to me.
I think, right. But the thing is that it may be that he's interested in seeing what we do with the tools that he's given.
Well, how do we know that he just didn't set the whole thing in motion and he just keeps moving? It's a big universe out there, you know?
You mean go on to the next creation or go on to the next thing?
Go on to the next thing because, you know, that there's a beauty in that. There's a synchronicity in
Yeah,
all right, let's move it away from God. That's always a good thing.
I would like to say this, though, that the quality we have in the non-goal-directed prayer area, where you pray non-goal-directedly, we find that the person that has more of a spiritual consciousness, qualities of consciousness, is the person who can produce that result. It's a harder result to produce than goal-directed prayer. So there is some weight to a spiritual mindedness because that's the only mind that will produce that result so far.
Yeah, and that's also in keeping with you know, metaphysics and consciousness and the global cosmic consciousness, universal consciousness, and all that stuff. Now, let's get into that a little bit more. You brought up, and this is one of the big things that we wanted to talk about, because you had called in on the show some months ago and mentioned the trickster, and we've talked about that a lot. And so, what's been some of your, I don't know, experiences or thoughts on the trickster type of phenomena?
Well, what Spindrift has done, and this is what we think will be probably ultimately the biggest important contribution to science. And if you go to the Spindrift website and look on the FAQ page, Frequently Asked Questions, you can read about there. And then if you want to read more about it, you can go more about the defense mechanisms of the mind. The founders of Spindrift, Bruce and John Klingbom, were wondering about, if there's so much paranormal phenomena happening around us all the time, and so much people are having some experiences, why isn't it more consciously noticed? And they came to the conclusion that the trickster was involved because it, along with our defense mechanisms, does not permit us to get a clear-cut fix on what is going on around us. In other words, our own minds, along with the trickster collective thought working against us, is preventing us from getting an accurate description of what is happening in the paranormal area. And they've done some mathematical tests on this theory of theirs, and it's too much to go into, and I can't even find a way to verbalize it in a short time. But it can be all researched on Spindrift, that the defense mechanisms don't want us to know too much about the paranormal realm or
now,
the spiritual realm.
Now, are you referring to our inherent consciousness defense mechanisms, or are you referring to some entity?
This would be our own mess that we make for ourselves.
Okay.
And it's partly culture, it's partly the way the brain is concocted, and then the trickster itself, though, outside of our mind-body system, there's a collective thought of the trickster, too, that just wants to mess things up so that we can't get a fix.
So is this an actual entity that you're referring to? Is that how you see it?
I see it as a form of negative consciousness, but maybe it is. Maybe there's a demonic element to it. Could be. So you could interpret that way. People can interpret it any way they want. Could
well,
be a
what
de-
I'm actually
demonic.
Asking, so let's clarify this. So are you saying that the trickster is essentially an aspect of negative consciousness that really has no inherent sentience?
Don't know, but that's good. I like the sound of it. That was really well. That's a nice sentence.
Must be on a roll.
The point is, why? Maybe we could go dig into a little deeper, like Spindrift did. The question might be, why is it that we're not permitted to see more factual information about the paranormal realm? You know,
good
why
question.
And we have a whole lot of speculations about this. You can just read one speculation after another on the Spindrift website. And in books about Spindrift. I go into this in my book, A Journey in the Prayer by Bill Sweet, by the way, too. It appears that, first of all, our defense mechanisms, as we know from our psychology 101 and 102, sometimes they're helpful to us. You know, some defense mechanisms keep us out of trouble sometimes.
Right.
So it could be that defense mechanisms, and without the help of the trickster, just the defense mechanisms, want to keep us on track so that we don't get too far away from a normal lifestyle, and that's why it does that, just keep us out of trouble, you know. Then, beyond that, though, it may be, and this is where the trickster comes in, that if we find out too much about it, then we're going to take on power, and the forces out there, maybe entities, maybe groups even, they want to keep this all to themselves, all these mental, spiritual, psychic forces to themselves. They don't want really too many people to know about it, kind of like magicians hiding their secrets.
Okay, and who is this group of people or group of whoever?
Well, that I don't know. That's a conspirational idea of consciousness, but I would say that you and I, and probably off the air, could speculate who some of these groups might be. I wouldn't want to.
So are we talking people, human being type people, groups?
Some of them are, and some of them are, and some of them may not be. It's kind of a
okay, well, if they're not human,
strange conspiracy, maybe that they don't even know each other. But it does seem to me that with all the interest and all the universality of paranormal effects and UFOs and everything else, that by this time we would have some solid evidence. Wouldn't you think so?
You would think so.
Well, then the question is, why not? And I think it's because of the Truth-Seeking Defense Mechanism thwarting our efforts. Every time we turn around, they thwart our efforts.
So let's just take a...
Well, the other thing, too, the other big part of that piece of that puzzle is the fact it's not socially acceptable to talk about these things. And so if it's not socially acceptable to talk about them, you know, if you and I were to go on a TV show and talk about what we just talked about, we'd be laughed at. Or
yeah.
People would be talking tongue-in-cheek. Because they're not open-minded enough to take into that even what they think is on the lunatic fringe, you know?
Yes, but I might say that there are some things that you can talk about with people if you approach it right. If you can ask, you, for instance, I've done this, and this is kind of interesting. I talk to people that think this is all lunatic, but then I would turn around on them and say, have you ever had some kind of traumatic spiritual experience or something extraordinary happened to you? And then they start telling you these experiences they
mm-hmm.
had, and they're skeptics.
Mm-hmm.
But you turn around to them and they tell you this. So it's almost like there's this schizophrenic thing in their mind, you know?
Well, you know, you can draw a similarity there too, Bill, with near-death experiencers who have, have been skeptic before they've had the experience, and then after they've had the experience come back and really have it's a transformative event to them. Where they
great analogy. Great.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
I attend a study group here for that phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting, too, how it relates to defense mechanisms. I don't know about probably the trickster, too. I have to think about it. But I think, in my opinion, from what I have heard and met these different people have had some of these near-death experiences, I think that they have probably the most realistic, accurate fix on what happened to them than other people have had paranormal experience. In other words, a lot of information came through. It wasn't blocked by the defense mechanisms, or it wasn't thrown off by the trickster. And I think I know the reason why. It's kind of funny. I think that maybe the trickster and defense mechanisms kind of get together and they say, you know, this person's going to die. So let them experience this, you know, let's go into the next experience. Because who are they going to tell? They can't come back and tell anybody.
Uh-huh.
And so they're resuscitated and brought back, and they tell everybody. So the defense mechanisms and the tricksters have been double-crossed.
Well, you know, I think Jacques Vallée also talks about, and I'm trying to remember which book he mentioned it in, was the fact that what if the trickster is something that we've co-inhabited this dimension and time and space with for thousands of years, and, you know, periodically we have these encounters, some brief, some not so brief, but, you know, maybe it's something, you know, because a lot of people, the first thing they want to do is, well, that's, you know, it's alien, or it's this, or it's that. Well, who knows? Maybe it's something that's been cohabitated this planet with us for a million years. One never knows.
And it might be part of our makeup. This is what Spindler thinks. It might be in us, and so we have to root it out within us, in our conscience, you know, the dark side of us.
Well, I guess you could say that if he went so far to say that we're all part of, like, a Gaia system. Yeah, that would make sense.
Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of unlike other things. I mean, for instance, if you're interested in music, let's say, I mean, there's nothing really preventing you from finding out about it because it's part of the normal thing going on, or whatever your big interest is. You want to start a good radio show like you, go ahead and start a radio show. But as far as getting into explaining something you experienced paranormally, man, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Everywhere you turn, you're you'll get all tied up. You know, so what's going on here? I actually experienced this. Why can't I verbalize it right?
Well, you know, one of the interesting things that you, when you say that, Bill, it reminds me of the times that that we've gone on investigations, and maybe you've had a young teenager there or a kid who maybe, or maybe even an adult for that matter, that has some sort of, you know, ability to perceive things that some of us don't, and you know, that they're running scared. Or,
yes,
you know,
it is scary.
There's a sensitive there, and they don't understand what's going on. And
yes.
You know,
oh, I'm so glad you brought so many different things there. First of all, I want to tell you that we've had some people take our Spindrift test, and afterwards it scared them. When they were doing it, it was very exciting, but they thought about it later, it scared them, and they wanted nothing more to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually saw their thought do something, and it
mm-hmm.
scared them.
Or convince them that what they were seeing, because I think people will put that out of their mind. Even, you know, they're gonna you know, suppress it. They know that's not acceptable.
Yes.
In society, so they're gonna suppress it. You know.
Yes. Yes. Oh, this is the defense mechanism. Your suppression comes from the defense mechanisms.
Uh-huh.
You see, it's amazing. I mean, there are people that have had fantastic spiritual and psychic experiences. And they forget about them. They forget they had them.
How well, it's too far. It's too much out of their comfort zone.
Uh-huh.
I mean, look. I mean, I think there's a similarity between people, and I don't think, and I think Doug will agree with me, and so would most of our listeners. I don't think that all the abductees out there are legitimate abductees. I think there's a very small percentage of people that are probably abductees.
Uh-huh.
And the ones that are abductees, you know, think of what that must do to their frame of reality. If you're told UFOs don't exist and people, you know, and there's no life out in outer space as far as we know, although we've come a little bit farther than we were 20 years ago, and all of a sudden this event happens to you with a missing time sequence in it. How do you deal with that? That's so far out of your reality. I think there's a similarity there.
Well, I can just quote one of my female friends told me. He says, I would rather have my friends and normal senses of life that I had before I experienced these things. So I'm just going to not talk about them anymore because I want my normal life back.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I think also, too, they also mirror some of the symptoms involved in post-traumatic stress syndrome. Or acute distress disorder, sort of thing, where you know why would
people
think that? Why would people think that?
Yeah, well, somebody had an experience like you described, and
mm-hmm.
then everybody else is telling them that they didn't have it. How? You're going to go nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
So I mean, you know, there's a lot we don't know about the consciousness of human beings yet, and how that interacts with the whole universe around us. I mean, we're getting some fascinating glimpses of what might go on, and
right.
And it's only going to get better, I think, as time goes on. I think I really think, and I'm sure Doug would agree with me, we're going to have to redefine what is consciousness. You know, that's going to, for like groups like yourselves, and we may be able to contribute in some small part ourselves, but I think that it's coming down the pike because we're redefining death. So, I mean, of course, consciousness is trying to, like,
yeah.
I remember one time scientists said they were trying to trap a plasma to try to create fusion. And they said it was like trying to contain Jell-O within about 5 or 10 rubber bands.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so, that interesting analogy. I like that. Yeah.
All right.
Well,
so
that's about right. That's about it. So did you want to ask me something else? Or?
Well, I do. I actually want to make a statement, too, to our live listeners. If you have a question or you'd like to, make a statement or something, you're more than welcome to call in. Our numbers are on the screen, 347-945-7799. And, Bill, what I wanted to do, I'd like to summarize a little bit. So, and you tell me if this is correct, if this is what you're saying. I just want to make sure I'm clear on it. When we talk about why, the great question, why can't we make any headway on discovering the source of many of these paranormal occurrences? If I understand you correctly, you're saying that it's a possibly two different things. One of them is our own defense mechanisms within our own consciousness. And the second thing is the trickster, which could be an aspect of consciousness that's negative, or it could be a group of people or other beings or something like that. Am I correct so far?
I think so. I think you have a pretty good grasp of it. I also might add to that that we feel that, I didn't want to go into actually how they did these experiments, but I will say this. What they found in the paranormal experiments they did of the defense mechanisms, in some parapsychology tests that have been done before many, many times by many people, like guessing which card is behind
Senior cards.
And all that, and throwing dice and trying to guess the dice and all that. Instead of studying that as a direct thing, what they did was is they found out that in the mathematics, there was an actual skewing going on, because there was evidence within the, what was already there that a paranormal effect was present. And so instead of studying that, the founders of Spindrift found a mathematical way to see how the cards and the dice themselves were manipulated so that they didn't form a pattern that was recognized by the researcher. In other words, the defense mechanisms kind of made everything look like it was part of an average when, in fact, there was a paranormal effect present so that the people would not be able to see that there was a paranormal effect present.
So are you saying that the thing, the defense mechanisms, paranormal in and of itself?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's another aspect of it. They sabotage what we're trying to get accomplished.
And who are they?
Well, the defense mechanisms or whatever demons or whatever it is. In other words, we want to make sure that we don't get too far away from the farm and find out about what's really going on. It's kind of like, was that old phrase, how do you keep them down on the farm once they've seen old Perry? You know, it's kind of like that. We want them to think about the material world, don't get too much into these weirdo woo-woo areas, pay attention to your life, feed your family, make a living. Don't get too into this, because if once you go into that, you're going to go off a cliff. And it's a matter of keeping us on an even keel so that we cannot find out what we really are desiring to find out.
Well, let's just take this theory down. Let's just follow it a little bit.
Okay.
What you're talking about is actually a part of human nature. To sum it up in a word, it's called denial. I mean, a lot of people are in denial about one thing or another. And
yes.
I mean, yes. I could take a common situation in our world. You take a toxic relationship, for example. You got two unhealthy people, they're in a bad relationship, but they won't leave it because to do so is scary. It goes outside their comfort zones, and there's a lot of fear. So they stick to what they know. They stick to what they're
comfortable. You stick to what you know, and the defense mechanisms want us to stay there.
Right.
And the trickster, and you ever heard the word liminal? Have you ever heard the term liminal?
I have, but I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
It's when you get into the boundary and fringe of what's going on in society. And paranormal things are kind of on the fringe and boundary, and just like, you know, psychedelic drugs are and things like that. And in this liminal area, this is where the trickster really is the playground of it. And they say they really play with that. If you get into that area, you are going to feel the effects of it. So, but if you go back and go to a normal sense of life and get away from the paranormal, then things quickly get back to normal again. The unfortunate thing about that is your inquisitiveness and things you're really interested in have been suppressed, like you mentioned earlier, and so you have no more interest in this. And it happens when you mentioned the kid was a teenager or something earlier. And young folks are naturally spiritual and naturally psychic, and then they lose it. Everybody knows. Everybody's heard that, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Why do you think
some people say they suppress it, you know, and there's probably a lot of people, or I won't say a lot of people, that's too much of a generalization, but there's probably a group of people that have those abilities and have suppressed it. But I mean, in some ways, they're no different than other people who have been different in society.
In the millions of people out there, you will find a few psychics and a few real spiritual men, people who, for some reason, are able to get through.
Well, they have that sensitivity, you know, and who knows why that gift is bestowed, you know, or gift or curse, I think, probably to some people. It's a double-edged sword.
Go ahead.
let's keep following this through, okay? So we've established that basis that people are in denial, and that's, if we wanted to boil it down, we could say that one of the reasons, I could paraphrase what I believe you're saying, one of the reasons why we can't really uncover what's going on is because people don't want it, essentially. They are in denial. They have the defense mechanisms, so on and so forth. Well,
too much trouble.
Right. Okay, so let's follow that through. What about people like, I don't know, me, for example? I'm not in denial about it. I do want to know about it. I am the type of person that will accept, you know, reality, whatever it is. It is what it is. I mean, I teach this stuff. And so I'd really like to know. And yet,
it doesn't matter. That's the whole point of this vendor thing. It doesn't matter. Even the people who are interested in knowing about it are being tricked.
So it's not, in my case, it's not so much a matter of defense mechanisms as it is this other entity or whatever we call the trickster.
It's some ratio between the two. It's still defense mechanisms.
How?
Underneath. In the subconscious mind, we don't know what's going on in the subconscious mind. For instance, like I said earlier, you could produce a paranormal effect, but the way your subconscious mind manipulates things, it will not let you see the details of what happened. You may get a little glimpse, but you won't actually see that it was actually more impressive than you're allowed to see consciously.
So who's in control of that?
Well, it may be that that part is unknown.
Hardwired?
We have to find ways that I don't think we've come up with a way to end run that yet. But, as I said, there are a few people amongst us who have these natural abilities, and for some reason they haven't been affected very much. And those are the people, it's like John Edwards. He's been tested, and it's been some interesting things that have come out of his, he's been tested in the laboratory, and some very interesting things came out of his work. But then again, you find people like that, and sometimes, I guess, in order to be impressive, sometimes they have to ad-lib things. But some people really have.
Where was that done at, Bill, do you recall?
University of Arizona.
That was
okay.
With Schneider, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think
Dr.
so.
Schneider did some testing on her.
I don't think so, but I can't think of who it was. It isn't. All right. I could find out for you.
I think he did as well, but
is that right? Okay, good.
Yeah, I saw that on a documentary, and
yes,
and so
and
okay.
The remote viewing. There's been some people who have been tested in remote viewing, and they've done darn well.
Yeah.
I mean, all things considered, I think it's like 15% above chance. But the people, the skeptics will say, "Well, that's not good enough." I said, "Well, if you've got something that's zero, it won't happen because it's completely random. But you have somebody who can get 15% above that. That's pretty impressive." They don't accept it, but I mean, man, if you could have 15% above chance, that's pretty good.
And just a side note, for anybody who is interested in remote viewing on Informal Paranormal, which is now on Sunday nights at 10 Eastern, we have some ongoing remote viewing experiments that are happening. And, you know, we've had some great results with Mike Jones and John Rossi. So if you're interested in that, tune in Sunday night at 10. And you can learn more about that. All right, so you're saying that even for those people who really want to know and don't have any issues,
they're not permitted to see it either.
And we need to keep going with that. Now, who? And this is the trickster part, apparently. But you're also saying it could be subconscious defense mechanisms.
Correct. Subconscious saboteurs in our own mind.
All right. So what
the
do
little
we do
men in black
this?
Might be in our own mind.
All right. So what do we do about this?
Well, I don't know what we do about this. I think we have to become aware of it and find out that it's a phenomenon that we have to deal with, like I wouldn't say a disease, but we have to become aware of it and find a way to tame it.
Well, I would say we're aware of it now. I mean, we've been talking about it, so
right.
How do we take that awareness to the next level?
Well, I don't know. I don't know, because I can tell you that as long as I've known about this thing, it hasn't improved anything. But I think that we are getting on the track of it being something that we have to become more aware of, and we have to get to a point where we can get around it. But I don't know how to do that.
But you're saying that some psychic people do.
There are a few people. It's just like there's Mozart's and there's Beethoven's and there's Einstein's. There's always somebody who's way above everybody else for some reason.
Are you talking about intelligent quotient, IQ, or are you talking about psychic ability?
I'm talking about, in this case, I'm talking about a psychic ability that has beat the odds and gotten around the defense mechanisms and can keep them intact and in check enough that they're not going to bother him, or the trickster is just can't get at him for some reason.
Hmm.
I mean, well, take Jesus, for instance. Look at all the paranormal stuff he did.
Well, actually, let's not go there. I mean...
Well, let's assume that he did what he did. He did. You know, he really handled the trickster and the defense mechanism, but nobody else has ever been able to do
well,
that.
Yeah, in story, yes. But let's take it to a current or a modern example. Let's take one of these psychics that, you know, are bona fide psychics that have gotten around the tricksters, you say. Why?
Well, there was a police detective, I'd have to look up his name, who worked for the Los Angeles Police Department, and he wondered why he was solving so many crimes. It kind of spooked him. So he walked into the parapsychology lab at Stanford University and messed with Russell Targ. You probably know Russell Targ.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I want to know about this. And so they said, well, they took him on as a client and tested him. It turned out, I think he was either the best or second best person they ever tested. And here was a guy that, for some reason, consciousness could see clues and see things happening and put them together in the past, the present, in the past and the present, and solve crimes. And turns out he just got the high psychic scores. And he was an amazing guy. Now, what's really interesting about that, even though the defense mechanisms of Trister didn't bother him personally, he must have bothered somebody else because he was assassinated.
I'm sorry, who?
He was assassinated.
Who was?
This detective.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
it's a big mystery. In other words, even though he himself could do these things, somebody evidently didn't want his ability to keep on going for whatever reason. It's a mystery.
Do you recall his name?
No, I do not, but you could ask Russell.
Okay. All right, so what about these modern psychics who have gotten around the trickster? You know, why haven't they been able to come up with an explanation for paranormal phenomena?
Well, this is very interesting what you're saying here. I would say maybe that's even the crux of it. If you can believe in these things and you can be interested in these things and you can ruminate about them and tell other people about your experiences, all these things are fine. But when you really get into it, where people are really getting convinced of it, or it looks like it's going in the direction of proof and pinning something down, that's when you really get into trouble. In other words, earlier in the conversation, we were saying you can't go on a TV show and talk about these things because you come across as a nutcase. You know, if the first thing's right, you can talk to these things with other people, because a lot of people out there are, maybe in a general way, are in denial. But if you get them on a one-on-one or in a small group, then they start spilling the beans that they've had these experiences too. You know, so in other words, they're just afraid to bring it out. But when you really get into trouble, is when you try to prove these things, when you really try to explain them. You can believe them and everything else, but if you take it out of the realm of mystery into the realm of science, this is when you get into trouble. Do you remember was it down in Arizona where the governor made fun of the UFOs that were over Phoenix or something? Remember that?
Yeah.
He had a big press conference and he made a joke about it. Well, once he went out of office, he said, you know, I may have acted like I was making a joke of it, but actually the thing shook me up. Remember,
yeah.
He was completely different when he got out of office. Remember that?
Yeah, he had seen it.
He had seen it. Yeah. But it's easier to joke about it, isn't it?
Oh, of course it is, because that's the cultural conditioning, that's society. But I'm still,
yeah.
You know, and see, part of our mission at Paranexus is to learn more about the human condition, you know, enhance the human condition by way of anomalous research. And I'm of the mind that, you know, rather than say it's too hard, I ask, how hard can it be? Come on, we can do this. You know, I have complete faith in the indomitable power of the human spirit and in our ability to discover things and to overcome.
What we were trying to do was actually show that this was a new wrinkle in science, that a lot of the things that we try to find out paranormally are blocked by the trickster and the defense mechanisms. This in itself is a whole new way to explain it. Now, Do you have any ideas how to overcome it?
You know, that's a good question. And now let me kind of answer it in this way. When you talk about defense mechanisms, I think you're absolutely correct. I think there are a number of people out there who just don't want to know. I mean, or it makes them uncomfortable. They don't know enough to know to not be afraid of it, that kind of a thing. So I think that does come into play. But there are a growing number of people out there who do want to know, who are interested in it, and are not afraid of it. I don't think that there could be something on a subconscious level, a defense mechanism, as you say. I mean, it's a possibility. But when I look
at what I'm saying is that some of these very people have had stronger psychic and spiritual experiences than they actually know they've had.
Sure, I agree. I mean, that could easily be the case. The evidence in my mind, and I'm just speculating here, I don't know, but
uh-huh.
The evidence, Grant and I have talked, and several of us talked about this quite a bit in the past, that it's almost like something is preventing us from really finding out. And I'm not talking
This is the whole thing.
Not so much in the hauntings area, but when you look at other things such as ufology, you know, it's like we have boiled it down to two things, fear and confusion, you know, and it depends on who you are, which one of those you have. Some people are afraid, and all it does is this activity, all it does is create fear.
Fear is pretty clear cut, but they're going to the confusion.
Confusion part is really when you're a researcher, because you'll take two different credible cases that are on opposite ends of the spectrum, and they conflict. And if one is true, the other one cannot be true, but yet they both seem to be true. So it's like somebody's playing games. Somebody
you got
is
it.
Just playing games. And so
you got it.
That's why we were so, you know, interested in the trickster aspect of this, because It's almost as if something is there. Now, I don't know what that is. We don't know what it is. And
yeah, well, it's easy. You understand the whole thing I'm trying to say. That's a good way of putting it. Something's trying to thwart our efforts.
Yeah, it's fear and confusion, and mm-hmm. so we can't. And yet, my mind is that we're not going to allow that to hold us back. We will figure it out.
I hope we do.
Well, you know, if we're in some sort of symbiotic relationship with this. You know, and it almost sounds like what you're describing is what's going on, and so, or even it could even be parasitic. Who knows?
Well, parasitic, yeah. I mean, it's like.
But if it could be mutually beneficial to both.
Okay, I don't know what you're saying there, but it sounds good.
Well, you know, like parasite, it benefits the parasite, harms the host. Okay. But
oh yeah.
What if it? If it has elements of both,
well, maybe it does.
Then that's
it,
the trickster.
Maybe
where
it does.
The gray areas where the tricksters are. You know.
Let's look into this a little bit. Now, it seems to me, from my observation and from some of our observations, that as a general rule, and this is not a put down, we're just talking here, that
mm-hmm.
the people who get wrapped up in paranormal subjects, you pick your subject, UFOs or whatever it is, it
mm-hmm.
sends their life off into a strange direction. And it also brings in problems with the wife or the husband or whatever which way it goes, or with their job or something. In other words, it becomes toxic, and they don't want that to happen, but it happens. Parasitic, you're saying. So in other words, there's a reason maybe you don't get into these things too deeply, because if you get them too deeply, you're going to throw off everything. And if you look at science fiction movies, they seem to bring this out. Remember in the Encounters of the Third Kind, that the guy was
mm-hmm.
building them out in his living room and drove his wife
right.
crazy, and he lost his family over his experience.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't understand him, but he had that experience. So anybody who has these experiences, unless the other person knows
what it is. Well,
you know, I
think what most people don't realize is most of the, I mean, I think that there's a large percentage of people who are interested in this area who are, I think, by and large, in surveys, they're better educated than the folks who have, you know, other belief systems.
When we interview
people,
and I think
that perhaps maybe when you, whether you're self-educated or whether you you know, are educated through an institution, I think education leads to an open mind, and it asks it more questions. And one question leads to the infinity of questions that never can be answered. But as long as you're trying, that's the adventure.
It's a lot of fun, isn't it? Oh, it's a lot of fun. I'm fascinated by the whole thing.
The trickster makes it that much more fun because whatever it is, however you want to label it, you know, mystery makes it's like throwing a little dash of hot sauce in your soup or chili.
Yes. Oh, you got it. We've interviewed people in the Spindrift Lab, and they would tell us about experiences they had, psychic experiences, spiritual experiences, spiritual healings. They said, we can tell you about it, but I can't tell anybody else about it. They think I'm a nut. I can't even tell my wife about it. And I almost always, when I went to those meetings of the near-death experience people who had these near-death experiences, they would say someplace in their speech that I can talk to you as a room of strangers, but I can't tell my best friend about it. I can't tell my wife about it. I can't tell my kids about it. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
You don't want to be made a fool or something, you know?
Yeah, and a lot of people are very reluctant to talk about it.
You wonder why. Now, I do have a speculation. I just thought, this is just off the top of my head. Maybe it'll be like the 100th monkey thing. Maybe as millions and millions of people take a strong interest in finding out about these things, maybe it'll break through the trickster and the defense mechanism. That's just a throwing
that
out there.
Well, we're hiding our consciousness. We can't be doing anything but good by trying to figure things out. And maybe that's the whole thing that keeps the whole ball of wax rolling, is the fact that we're the inquisitive one. The carrot is being dangled in front of the stick in front of us, and we can be on this wheel forever and ever, and we get benefit from it, and whoever's holding the carrot with the stick is doing the same thing.
Very good, yeah. Yeah, that's right. You got.
And maybe we
there.
Both benefit. You know, they get off by watching us, and we get up by getting a better education about the universe, you know. But it doesn't come, like right away. It's got to be gradual.
No, it really doesn't. It really doesn't. And don't you hate it when people tell you that you didn't have an experience that you had?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's such a wonderful, and this is my perception, this wonderful interweaving. This incredibly beautiful tapestry, and I know people have heard me talk about this before, that, the older I get in life, the more the more fascinating I think it is, and how we are all so interconnected. And maybe once we realize that we have this interconnection, maybe we'll be able to evolve a little bit further. Who knows?
I don't think we have time to go into it, but by the way, the Spindrift website is spindriftresearch.org or spindriftresearch.com.
Yeah, and tell them about your book real quick.
Book is Journey into Prayer, Pioneers of Prayer in the Laboratory, the Agents of Science or Satan. People either think we're doing science or they think we're from Satan. That's how people view us. And the thing you're talking about, quantum entanglement there, how we're interconnected, there's a lot of Spindrift about associational linkage. Look on the FAQ page about associational linkage, how we associate in our mind to people through linkage. It's about entanglement.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, Bill, we really appreciate you taking your time and joining us tonight. Interesting discussion. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure meeting you.
Pleasure meeting you. Hope we meet you sometime in person.
Yeah, and we wish you the best with your research and everything you're doing. So you take care, and perhaps we'll talk again sometime.
Okay, thanks very much, and you guys are doing good work.
Thank you.
Same to you.
Take care.
Good night.
We appreciate everybody listening to us tonight live or on the archive. We want to invite you back next Thursday night, where Gregory Kent will be interviewing Jamie Best, also known as the Reluctant Medium, so it should be an interesting discussion. And don't forget, this Sunday evening at 10 o'clock Eastern, Informal Paranormal with John Rossi and Mike Jones. They will be going over their remote viewing experiments as well as some other stuff. So please join us then. Appreciate everybody in the chat room with your comments and participation. And Grant, until next week, my friend.
Good night, Doug. Good night, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Take care. Good night.